Today's program is entitled, Stand Still, Little Lambs, and Prepare to be Shorn. Its writer is Jeremy Miller, author of The New Slavery, which was recently serialized by this program and in Free Speech. Mr. Miller is a graduate student in economics who has worked at high levels in major U.S. corporations. He has devoted much of his energies in recent years to public education regarding the destructive effects of so-called equal employment opportunity on our economy and our society as a whole. Stand still, little lambs, and prepare to be shorn. Section 1, in which we ask the question, $8 for a wooden tongue depressor? What? Here's why. Let us begin with a brief quiz. You will be asked to compare Situation 1 with Situation 2. In Situation 1, you have Group A, consisting of 100,000 people visiting the doctor for a certain medical procedure, and they pay their own bills. In Situation 2, you have Group A and Group B, each consisting of 100,000 people, both visiting the doctor for the same medical procedure as in Situation 1. However, in Situation 2, you have Group A picking up not only their own tabs, but they also pick up the tabs for Group B as well. Now for the question. What will Group A in Situation 2 be paying? Will they pay double the amount they pay in Situation 1? The answer is no. The amount paid by Group A in Situation 2 will be significantly more than double that of Situation 1. In Situation 2, you have 200,000 people visiting the doctor, and this is clearly a case of higher demand relative to Situation 1, in which there are only 100,000 doctor visits. Simple supply and demand analysis tells you that higher demand results in higher prices. So in Situation 2, Group A is harming its own interests by picking up the tabs for Group B, because when a member of Group A visits his doctor, he will have to face higher prices. Isn't Situation 2 similar to what we see in the United States with white people picking up the tab for the underclass's medical treatment? Actually, the reality of what goes on is much worse than Situation 2 because, one, the medical procedures demanded by the underclass are not quite the same as those demanded by traditional Americans, and two, the per capita demand for services on the part of the underclass is out of proportion relative to their numbers. For example, you will see many more gunshot wound cases among the underclass. Each case can cost upwards of $200,000. As another example, consider maternity cases. These are likewise quite expensive. The underclass is reproducing at a rate 9 times greater than the American portion of the population, and we are picking up the tab for this reproduction. When a white couple considers the inflated price tag of a new delivery, some of them simply cannot afford it, or they decide that it is not worth it, thus contributing to a lower white birth rate and even the ultimate extinction of the race. One more example is lung cancer. Smoking is more prevalent among the underclasses, so they will represent a higher ratio of lung cancer cases. So when a white American faces cancer treatment, the price is higher, even sky high, due in part to the treatment demanded and given to the alien races we subsidize. And consider AIDS and the much higher proportion of non-white victims relative to their percentage of the population, and the fact that even most of the white victims of this plague are part of a self-selected, coddled, and subsidized minority. Need I say more? There are other factors which add even more upward pressure to the price of medical treatment. One of the greatest evils is the current nature of the administration of medical insurance, whether public or private. Let me digress for a moment. When you dent the fender of your car and you take it to the body shop, the first question you will hear is, "Are you insured?" This is because the body shop operator is going to quote one price if you are insured and another price if you are not. The body shop operator knows that he can easily inflate the price if you are insured, because you will not care since someone else will be paying the bill. With that someone else, the insurance company, being so far removed from the situation that it finds it easier to pay the bill than to haggle. You will find the very same thing happening in the medical profession. The first question you will be asked is, are you insured? Do not kid yourself. This type of bill padding attitude is extremely prevalent in the medical profession, and it contributes to extreme upward pressure on medical prices for the insured and uninsured alike, with Medicare and Medicaid being as much or more to blame as private insurance companies. What you will also see when someone else is picking up the tab for medical services are indiscriminate visits to the doctor for the most trivial of cases. People go running to the doctor for the smallest splinter or hangnail, visits for which they would never be willing to pay themselves, thus raising the overall demand for medical services and hence raising prices. The ramification of this is that many doctors find they can earn big bucks for the easiest of work. This writer lives in an area which is rapidly going third world. The prevailing price here for first-time doctor's visits ranges from $200 to $300 plus extras. Why should a doctor bother with brain surgery or trauma burns when he can earn $800 per hour pulling out splinters? This means that brain surgery and burn treatment will be left to a dwindling minority of doctors who will charge astronomical prices as their supply decreases. Too frequently, doctors are providing substandard treatment to patients, and they take the attitude that the patient has no right to complain, because after all, the patient got the services for free. That's not really true, of course. Someone else is paying for it. These doctors simply advise the patient to go elsewhere for further treatment, and the patient rarely protests because he knows that his bills will be paid until his condition goes away. So now we see patients visiting 2, 3, 4, 5 or more doctors before they receive the proper treatment or the proper diagnosis. This likewise contributes to higher demand for medical services, and again, higher demand results in higher price pressures. Equal employment opportunities, ruination of jobs and wages at lower levels of the economy has caused an upward invasion of people into higher professions. In other words, people will run to whatever profession still enables them to eat and live comfortably. When people are strictly motivated by financial gain to enter the medical profession, then you will see many marginal performers among the bunch. And as a further consequence, malpractice will rise, and so will malpractice insurance rates. These higher rates will be spread out among all medical practitioners, who will just pass the higher costs on to their customers. That is, to the patients, in the form of higher medical bills. At this point, you may think that the only salvation from this is personal medical insurance. However, this is not quite right. First of all, medical insurance can cost several thousand dollars per year, and this expense applies even if you are lucky enough to never use your medical insurance. If you think your employer should provide you with group insurance, the cost of this will just be deducted from the gross pay that you would have been making in the absence of this benefit. Anyway, efforts at cost containment are being made, with the pendulum swinging to the opposite extreme to some extent. Some insurance companies, in a desperate effort to rein in escalating medical costs, are now indiscriminately disallowing certain expenditures instead of indiscriminately approving them. Similarly, HMOs are cutting allowed treatment to the bone. But these actions are hardly a solution and hardly in the best interests of patient care. Enter the government. Bill and Hillary wanted, and pending re-election, probably still want, to institute a national health care system which will bring virtually everyone under its umbrella of protection. But wait a minute. Didn't we already establish that guarantees of medical care to the underclass or anyone who wants it is a great evil which sends everyone running to the doctor, thereby raising demand drastically and thus raising prices dramatically? Not to worry, says the administration. The government will impose medical price restrictions, which will prevent the projected rise of prices. But wait another minute. Didn't Richard Nixon clearly demonstrate that government price controls were a total disaster? Let me tell you what I predict as the result of governmental price controls in the field of medicine. You will see the emergence of a two-tiered market for medical services. The first tier will be the legitimate, above-ground market in which you have the price controls and in which you will see severe shortages of available services and supplies, so long waiting lists will develop. The second tier will be the underground black market, in which it will be possible to immediately obtain the desired high-quality services, just as long as the going rate, that is, the exorbitant rate, is paid. You are already seeing something akin to this under Canada's governmental system of health care. Instead of resorting to a black market, Canadians are bypassing the long lines in their own system of so-called free medicine and crossing the border to obtain desired services at the going rate in the United States. Conclusions. If whites in America subscribe to the equalitarian tenet of picking up the tab to provide the underclass with services in any given market, then white America may very well find itself going broke. Going broke to keep the remarkably ungrateful brown ones healthy, and at the same time, unable to afford to keep its own families well. This is exactly what we are seeing in the field of health care. It is interesting to note that the daily inpatient rate in a municipal hospital near here, which caters to an increasingly third world population, the daily rate is $1,450. But members of the underclass who can't afford it pay nothing. The socialistic idea of guaranteeing everyone a certain standard of living or level of medical services in this case, regardless of the worth that that person is ascribed in the free market, is a faulty idea indeed, and it has failed miserably wherever it has been attempted. That idea is bad enough when it is attempted within a relatively homogeneous and advanced white society. When it is applied to the boiling pot of multiracialist America, the result is corruption, theft, and ultimately destruction and collapse of what used to be the finest healthcare establishment in the world. If the government makes an attempt to provide certain services which an individual could not afford on free market determined wages, then the government is giving that individual an incentive not to work and not to save, and this is another fatal bug in the system. Even the concept of insurance is a little socialistic, but remember that rational men in charge of insurance companies would never have assumed the risk of the subhuman behavior of much of the underclass, or their chronic inability to pay for their coverage. Equalitarian laws demanding coverage for those who can't pay their way and who engage in animalistic, unhealthy behavior is going to destroy the system. Destroy it to the extent that decent, hard-working people will lose out completely. We are heading in that direction very quickly. A further thought. As the underclass expands, average intelligence of the population decreases, as does the understanding of what constitutes quality health care. If the patient population becomes more dumbly complacent about the level of service they receive from the medical establishment, then that which is supplied will be adjusted accordingly to meet that which is demanded. To put it a little differently, as the minority becomes the majority, the treatment provided to everyone becomes geared to the lower expectations of those who receive the most treatment. The bottom line is lower standards. It looks like sometime soon, We may have to return to the system as it was in the days of Dr. Dan, when everyone managed their own health care decisions according to what they could afford, and if they couldn't afford it, they pulled their own teeth and set their own broken bones. And if you still think that the politicians will pull a rabbit out of the hat and make everything okay again, then all I can say to you is, stand still, little lambs, and prepare to be shorn.
Breaking down the walls of censorship, this is American Dissident Voices. Send $1 and you'll receive our catalog of suppressed books and tapes, including books and tapes you can't get anywhere else. Send $1 to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
With equal employment opportunities, downward wage equalizing effects, whereby wages will be equalized to the value of the least preferred job candidate within each job category, you have situations where workers will see powerful incentives to upgrade their skills and invade higher professions to recoup their losses in purchasing power. The ramifications of this is that you will, one, start to see situations of oversupply of labor in certain higher job categories, thereby driving down the compensation levels of these job categories. Two, with the exodus of the best and the brightest from each lower profession, you will see average capability levels in all professions declining. Three, you will start to see an economy without substance, because it is in the lower professions where much bottom-line productive work is done. Four, you will have a society approaching the all chiefs and no Indians anti-ideal. Five, you will see overemphasis on education, to the point where a mere college degree becomes virtually worthless, and only a brand-name degree will count for something, e.g., Harvard, Princeton, Yale, etc., thereby increasing demand for brand-name degrees and sending their prices through the roof, while wages still continue to head south. And six, eventually holders of even brand-name degrees will face a job market with declining, downwardly equalized wages at all levels. Aren't we seeing this happening right now in the United States labor market? For example, consider medicine and law. Because job and wage opportunities are being extinguished elsewhere in the economy, applications to medical and law schools are up, even though compensation levels in medicine and law are going down. For you computer people out there, consider web page design. Companies are frantic to develop web pages, but not just because they are fans of state-of-the-art technology. Far from it. What they are eager to do above all else is the ultimate downward equalization of their customer service representatives by eliminating them and getting their customers to do their own data entry on a web page. What will become of the displaced customer service reps? They might go to a 2-bit commercial school on a government grant and study web page design and invade that job category, thereby creating an oversupply of labor in it. Just look at all the promotion on television for people to upgrade their computer skills. Promotion that is chock full of fallacy indeed. The socioeconomic hierarchy is like an organization chart, which in turn is like a triangle, wide at the bottom and narrow at the tip. What you have here is a rush of persons from the wide bottom, squeezing, shoving, and viciously vying and undercutting in order to secure a position near the narrowing tip. Then low-paid jobs in the wide bottom, where wages are still being depreciated due to EEO, go begging. What is the response of the world manipulators to this state of affairs? They go running to governments to open the floodgate to immigration, to fill those jobs at wages below the poverty line, at least by U.S. standards. The dumbest student of high school economics knows that the worst thing to do is to allow immigration when there are declining wages in a country. Once the immigrants become established, then the best and brightest of the second generation immigrants feel the pinch of downward wage equalization, and they too go on an upward invasion into prestigious universities and professions. Let us take one last look at the racial angle to the economic morass we are sinking into. From the analysis of downwardly equalized wages, we see that labor buyers will not pay white wages to lesser preferred job candidates, at least not for long. But what about sellers of products or services? If a seller is required to charge equal prices to preferred and non-preferred buyers alike, will we see landlords charging white rents to blacks? Or will they charge black rents to whites? Doctors charging white rates to blacks? Or will they charge black rates to whites? Hotel owners charging white room rates to blacks? Or will they charge black room rates to whites? Theme park operators charging white admission fees to blacks? Or will they charge black admission fees to whites? And on and on and on. They will raise the prices to everyone to compensate for the additional risk. When we cannot make free choices, when we are forced by law to treat the unequal equally, then there is a terrible price in wealth and freedom to be paid. A terrible price that cannot be hidden much longer. It is not exaggeration to say that it is making our society dysfunctional. The high-tech American economy and booming stock market may seem in some ways to contradict the picture I have painted. But remember, there is a lot of momentum built up from the days of freedom and of white America. The American economy and equity markets are like the ocean, with the crests of the waves getting higher and higher. But if you look closely, the tide is going out. And as the inevitable forces of natural law wreak their vengeance on those foolish enough to disregard them, the undertow is pulling us down, down, down.
This is American Dissident Voices. Why don't you write today to the fine radio station that carries this program and let them know that you appreciate their belief in freedom of speech. Remember, the enemies of freedom never rest. Don't let their voices be the only ones this station hears.
You saw the special on CNN. You've heard the hysteria from Jewish groups for the last 10 years and more. If there is any one book that the enemies of America would like to ban, it is The Turner Diaries. Now, William Pierce's novel of racial revolution in the 1990s has come to life on audio cassette, read by the author. The Turner Diaries is the book that answers the question, what will you do when they come to take your guns? Earl Turner and his fellow patriots face this question and are forced underground when the U.S. government bans the private possession of firearms and stages the mass gun raids to round up suspected gun owners. The hated Equality Police begin hunting them down, but the patriots fight back. Now you can hear the entire text of the Turner Diaries, complete, unabridged, and unexpurgated, read by its author, Dr. William Pierce. The emotion, the intensity, the power of this most powerful of books will move you, and the ideas contained within it will change your life forever. You will hear this book as its author intended it to be heard, with the emphasis, tone, style, and feeling exactly as he envisioned them, Nearly 10 hours in length, The Turner Diaries on audio cassette provides an experience that will never be forgotten. This giant album of 8 full-length audio cassettes contains an important new introduction by the author, Dr. William Pierce. Order our item number 668 for $53 postpaid. Write today to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA. Overseas listeners can use IRCs or international postal money orders. Our announcers will repeat the address in a moment. Remember to ask for item number 668 and enclose a gift of $53 or more. Stand Still, Little Lambs, and Prepare to be Shorn was produced by Jeremy Miller and Kevin Alfred Strom. Until next week, this is Kevin Alfred Strom reminding you that every time you look at the night sky, think of Orion. Our race is our nation.